Next case is 08-1200, Disciplinary Counsel versus Don S. McCullough. Mr. Grave.
Thank you, Your Honor. Mr. Chief Justice and the other justices, may it please the court, my name is David Grave, and I represent Don McAuliffe in this matter. The main issue in the case is the first objection that we filed with respect to the stay of the proceedings. And real quickly, as I understand the status of the law before this court, pursuant to the Steele decision, which was issued in 1981, when an attorney is convicted of an offense, whether it's a felony or a misdemeanor offense, the proceedings with respect to the disciplinary counsel are stayed until the conclusion of the direct appeal process in his case. In Mr. McAuliffe's case, what occurred is he was convicted and pursued his direct appeal to the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals, and that was concluded with an affirmance in June of last year. He then went to the United States Supreme Court, and in October of last year, the cert was denied. As a result of that, the proceedings before the panel of three individuals then recommenced, if you will. The stay was lifted, and we pursued the case in front of the three individual panel in April of this year, of April of 2008. During the course of those proceedings, as per the instructions of Mr. McAuliffe, I requested that essentially the case be stayed because he was filing what we call a motion to vacate in the federal system. That is found under 28 U.S.C. 2255. And it is akin or equivalent to our petition in post-conviction under 2953.21. It's the same sort of concept. The panel, in their decision, which was affirmed by the board, stated that because of the fact of the Steele decision, they had to proceed. The Steele decision basically says that whenever a collateral attack on a judgment occurs after the direct appeal, that is not considered part of the appeal process, so therefore we have to proceed. What we are saying is that since the status of the law has changed since the Steele decision, public policy states or should allow minimally a petition or a motion to vacate.
If we agreed with your position, would we have to modify the Steele decision in your judgment?
No, sir. I don't believe that we have to. And the reason is, there are two reasons. One is Judge Steele, when he got done with his round of appeals in the direct appeal process in the Ohio system, filed a habeas corpus action under 28 U.S.C. 2254. That is totally different than what Don McAuliffe did in his case. Don McAuliffe basically filed a motion to vacate, which again is akin to our petition in post-convictions in the Ohio system. The other reason has to do with what has occurred since 1981 as far as the status of the law, both in petitions and post-conviction in Ohio and also in the federal system. In the federal system in 1996, they restricted heavily how an attorney can file a collateral proceedings. The first thing they did was say that you had 1 year to file your motion after you get done with your direct appeal. Don McAuliffe filed his within 6 months. The second thing it does, it says because of res judicata and other concepts like that, you essentially have one bite of the apple today. If you file a motion to vacate, you have to put in all of the information, whether it's Brady material, ineffective assistance of counsel, whatever. You've got to put all of those issues in the first petition. If you don't, you essentially are precluded from pursuing any other type of situation. In the olden days, when the Steele case was first decided, or when it was decided, you essentially had, and I agree with the Steele decision, you essentially had any kind of number of times you could file a petition in habeas, a motion to vacate. You can't do that today. It's precisely what has occurred under the Ohio, when the Ohio General Assembly changed the law with petitions in post-conviction. In September of 1996, when the change in Ohio's post-conviction became effective, what it stated essentially was that in a petition in post-conviction, you had 180 days to file, you had 6 months to file your petition after the end of your, or while your direct appeal was in process. That is almost precisely what has occurred in the federal system. So what we are saying is, we are not asking, or we are not saying in any fashion that Don McAuliffe is doing this to try to thwart the proceedings, try to stay the proceedings for frivolous reasons. He's doing it because he's got this right to proceed under this motion for vacate. In the motions for vacate, there is no question that you can present information through affidavits, any form of information that is not on the record in the direct appeal. That's precisely what occurs in petitions and post-conviction in the Ohio system. And this court has said repeatedly that a petition for post-conviction can go forward if there is evidence outside the record that is sufficient. So when the April 2008 panel hearing occurred, Don McAuliffe specifically instructed me to not admit the misconduct, which is a mitigating factor in the panel's determinations, because he was filing a motion to vacate. He was at cross purposes. He essentially said, how can I admit my misconduct if I'm filing a motion to vacate in which I'm trying to get relief from the judge, from the trial judge? So during the course of the hearing, I stated that. And as the court is aware, at the conclusion of the hearing, they cited the Steele decision. And that decision, again, says that because of finality, there has to be a cutoff time. All we're asking for is to allow Don McAuliffe to conclude this round of proceedings. If he had been convicted in Ohio of a felony offense, he would have been allowed to file a petition in post-conviction, and theoretically, the panel would be under the same ruling as the Steele decision.
Mr. Graff, would you then be asking, if we were to agree with your position, would you then be asking for another hearing, another disciplinary hearing, once those proceedings were concluded?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yes, Justice Langer. I absolutely would be asking that because in the stipulations and in the panel's findings of fact and conclusions of law, they stated that Don McAuliffe, through me, cooperated throughout the entire proceedings. There's no question that the disciplinary counsel says there's no mitigation in this case. That is absolutely incorrect. Through the stipulations, it shows that Don McAuliffe cooperated throughout the entire proceedings. As soon as his direct appeal process ended, I paid close to $400,000 in fines and restitutions in the district court, and it was done pursuant to my client's instruction. There's another mitigating influence, and I can't remember it off the top of my head right now, but the other one is he had no disciplinary actions. He was an attorney since November of 1972, and this instance is the first time that he's ever had any situation with
counsel. Did you say that he paid in association with the crimes that he was convicted of the restitution?
That's correct.
That he's now attacking that the legitimacy of that conviction collaterally, correct?
That's correct. But at the conclusion of the direct appeal is when he told me to pay the fines and the restitution, which totaled $385,000, and with interest it is close to $400,000. The other point is the panel stated that there were several multiple offenses occurring here. My understanding of multiple offenses is if there's a pattern of misconduct that occurs over a period of years, months, weeks, whatever. This was one instance. This house burned down in March of 2002, and from that incident emanated the trial and the conviction of Don McAuliffe. Chief Justice, I didn't reserve 2 minutes at the very, very beginning. May I reserve 2 minutes?
Yes.
I forgot to ask you that.
Counsel, follow up to Justice Lansinger's question. If his collateral attack is unsuccessful, you would still want a rehearing. Is that correct?
No, sir. If it is unsuccessful, maybe I misunderstood her question. If it is unsuccessful, then I'm not going to be his attorney after that. I believe that he is entitled to a round of a motion to vacate that he is pursuing right now. After that is concluded, if we are successful, then obviously
We
deserve a rehearing or another hearing in the panel.
If you're on if he
loses, that's it.
Okay, because the panel, part of their justification for saying we're not going to hold up is that they felt there could be multiple collateral attacks on that verdict and that there needed to be finality.
That's an excellent point, and I agree with, I see what you're asking me, and that what we're asking for is one time period dealing with the motion to vacate, and after that, the ball game's over for Don McAuliffe.
What's the time frame, as best you can estimate it, on the resolution of the collateral attack that is presently underway?
I didn't hear the last part, sir.
What's the time frame? What would you estimate to be the time frame for a conclusion of the collateral attack that is presently filed in federal court on behalf of your client?
This is a public record, and it's not in the record here, but the disciplinary counsel has stated in her response that if the court allows the motion to vacate into the record, she would like the opportunity to put the entire record in. The entire record shows that Don McAuliffe has asked for an expedited hearing in the district court so he could get it over with as quickly as possible. So in direct answer to your question, at the worst, I would say a year and a half, at the worst.
But that would be for resolution of the district court. Would there not be an appeal if your client was unsuccessful to the Sixth Circuit and perhaps then to the U.S. Supreme Court as well?
That is also correct, but in my opinion,
it wouldn't be a year and a half. It would be several years, wouldn't it? I mean, in reality.
No, sir. What I am saying is, at the conclusion, and I didn't make that clear, at the conclusion of the motion to vacate, when Judge Marbley makes his decision,
Pardon me, please?
When Judge Marbley makes his decision.
Yes.
On the motion to vacate, the 2255, that's it. If he wins, then I deserve a rehearing. If he loses, the ball game's over. That's what I'm saying.
Well, but the relator says in its brief that on page 9 that that's not the case, that he could continue to file the section 2255 motions, or at least, I guess, request the court to file them. And then she says respondent has post-conviction remedies in addition to section 2255 motions. Is that, do you agree with that, or is that not correct?
I didn't hear the last part. That she said
that,
what?
That, she, that further respondent has post-conviction remedies in addition to 28 U.S.C. section 2255. Is that right or not? Do you agree, agree with it?
That's correct, but we are not saying that that's what we want to do.
Well, but we're looking at it from, not from what, frankly, from what you were saying, but the potential that this could, this matter could go on for years. And all the while, we're waiting to decide whether he should be sanctioned for the conduct for which he's been convicted. That's our dilemma, I guess, is that there's nothing to prevent him from keeping his law license while he files successive motions and attempts to delay, could be just for delay, or it could be because he truly believes that he should prevail on these motions.
I believe that this court can make a statement that because of the status of the law with respect to, again, collateral attacks on the judgment, that the panel should have some discretion as to how to proceed. A good example, Your Honor, is at the conclusion of the Sixth Circuit's case in June 21st of last year, I called her and I said, we want to appeal to the United States Supreme Court. She said, no problem. And we had a phone conference and the case was stayed until the end of the Supreme Court's decision, which was in October. So what I'm saying is the panel here has no discretion. They have to follow the Steele decision. And what I'm saying is they should be allowed some discretion. But it should not go past the point where Justice O'Donnell was saying, where this could go on for years and years. We're not saying that.
You're saying we can put a limit on how long we will wait.
Yes, and I'm not being, this court can do that. I'm not saying
we can
to
do
be
a lot
funny,
of
but you can say this. You can
sure.
actually
yeah, sure. we can.
Make the statement that you're entitled, the panel is entitled to review the proceedings dealing with the first stage. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Grave. Ms. Brown.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, Lori Brown on behalf of Relator Disciplinary Counsel. I'd like to start with the last questions first, and with regard to the future of this case, if in fact this court were to, and I disagree with Mr. Grave's answer to Justice O'Donnell regarding whether you would need to overrule Steele, absolutely you would need to overrule the Steele decision, and or carve out some sort of exception to the Steele decision for 2255 motions, and there, since 1981, has been no reason to overrule the Steele decision. More importantly, perhaps, this court would also have to go against the rules for the government of the bar, in particularly GovBar Rule 5, Section 5B, which provides, in part, that a criminal conviction, certified copy of a criminal conviction, is proof that the lawyer engaged in the conduct for which he or she has been convicted. So if you consider both of those together, you absolutely would have to first go against the rules for the government of the bar, and second, overrule and or carve out an exception to the Steele decision. This is not a case that calls for that. The respondent, Don McAuliffe, was convicted by a jury Following his jury conviction, he asked the court under Federal Criminal Rule 29 for vacation of the conviction. That request was refused by the trial court. He then asked in writing. The trial court again refused his request. His conviction was affirmed by the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals, and his writ of certiorari was denied by the United States Supreme Court. During that time, the matters were stayed before the Board of Commissioners on Grievances and Discipline. Since the denial of certiorari, the matter proceeded forward. There is no reason and no precedent, as you know, for delaying this matter further in order to allow for collateral attacks on the judgment. Mr. Grafe describes Mr. McAuliffe's efforts as post-conviction relief, but what it is a collateral attack on his conviction. And the conviction was by a jury and should stand, and does stand at this point. With regard to the final questions from Justice O'Donnell, with regard to how long this would take, Mr. Grafe opined that if Mr. McAuliffe is successful in his 2255 motion, he would ask for a hearing at that point. Well, most certainly we would object at that point, because I would imagine that the government may appeal. If Judge Marbley grants the 2255 motion and vacates Mr. McAuliffe's sentence, you would probably see appeal from the United States. We then would ask for it to be stayed. Depending on what the result of the appeal decision was, perhaps we could go forward at a hearing at that point. A lot of this is purely speculation.
But if he is successful, then doesn't it go back for a new trial, and wouldn't that require you to be stayed again?
If it goes back for a new trial, it would be required to be stayed again. However, what we can't get away from, Your Honor, is that according to the rules for the government of the bar, there is a conviction, a felony conviction here. Six counts, he was convicted pursuant to the indictment, two counts of mail fraud, two counts of money laundering, two counts of committing mail fraud by use of fire, and conspiracy to commit mail fraud by use of fire.
And Mr. Grafe seems to imply that if this is unsuccessful, his role is done, he would be counsel no longer, and he would allow your proceedings or our proceedings to go forward, but that doesn't necessarily mean that his client couldn't go out and get another attorney and continue successive petitions or endless appeals, even though Mr. Grafe is no longer doing it.
That's correct, Your Honor. It changes the playing field or the players. It doesn't change the playing field. Mr. McAuliffe will continue to have options. And as we pointed out in our brief, he could ask the court, Judge Marbley in particular, the district court, over and over under the same case, because obviously, as this court knows, the 2255 motion is filed in his case, criminal case.
We could put a limit on how long we will wait, could we not? For instance, we could say that he gets one chance at the Section 2255 motion, and if Judge Marbley were to deny that motion, that then the hearing proceeds. We could do that. We have the authority to do that, certainly, couldn't we?
I believe you do have authority to do that, Your Honor.
I argue we shouldn't use it, I'm sure, but...
Please?
You would argue that we should not use that authority, but we do have that authority.
I would argue you should not use that authority on the basis of the Steele decision. There is a need for finality in these types of cases on the basis of the fact that this is a jury conviction, six-count felony conviction, affirmed on appeal, which is the direction this court has taken since enacting the rules for the government of the bar. And that is the authority under which this court has disciplined lawyers and judges who have been convicted of felonies.
Counsel, how old is Judge McAuliffe?
How old is Judge McAuliffe? I believe he is about 60 years old.
Okay.
Thank you.
Counsel, I have a...
The dilemma here is that it's disbarment. If it were indefinite, then... we could unring the bell. If he is successful with a collateral attack and then is not subsequently reconvicted, his disbarment would be a miscarriage of justice at that point. But that would seem to be down the road a ways. If it were indefinite, we can pull that back. But disbarment, we can't.
I think, Your Honor, let me try and clarify that at this point. Mr. McAuliffe is presently what we call felony suspended.
Right.
If this court were to take any action other than affirm the board's recommendation of disbarment, we would ask that Mr. McAuliffe remain felony interim suspended, that he not be indefinitely suspended. Mr. McAuliffe, at some point, whether in this case that we are arguing today or in some case down the road, the crimes of which he was convicted and the misconduct found by the board for those crimes and that misconduct should be disbarred. He should not be indefinitely suspended. So if we leave the word indefinite suspension out of your question, what you would need to do is continue his interim suspension, his interim felony suspension. We argued against that at the hearing, and we argue against that before this court today.
And the evidence in this case is strictly his conviction. As I read the file, there was no evidence put on. It was evidence of the conviction.
That's correct, Your Honor. Mr. McAuliffe, or Mr. Grafe, excuse me, explained to this court that in his opinion there was no pattern of misconduct in this case, which is one, switching gears, which is one of the aggravating factors found by the Board of Commissioners. If this court looks at the indictment under which Mr. McAuliffe was charged and convicted, there are a couple different occasions in the indictment where the government lists the overt acts engaged in by Mr. McAuliffe that led to his conviction. Those overt acts are, in fact, a pattern of misconduct. This is not one isolated event, as Mr. Grafe urges you to believe, but instead a series of events. For example, increasing the insurance coverage on his house, removing items from the house that were personal, family photographs, antiques. Following those two events, the fire occurred. Following that event, Mr. McAuliffe submitted an insurance application. That was refused. He asked for a change of adjuster. He received a change of adjuster, submitted another insurance claim. That was paid. That is a pattern of events, a series of events that establishes the pattern of misconduct in this case. Relator also encourages this court to disbar Mr. McAuliffe at this time. And I'm going to talk a little bit about Mr. Grafe's argument about whether this court can do anything other than disbar a judge. First of all, Mr. McAuliffe is a lawyer. He was a judge at the time he was indicted at the time of the crimes. For crimes that are committed by attorneys, such as the crimes committed by Mr. McAuliffe, this court has repeatedly disbarred lawyers. It has disbarred judges as well, but has disbarred lawyers. This court obviously has other options. It can listen to mitigating evidence just as it did in the Gallagher case. Counsel for respondent mentioned that Relator did not recognize any mitigation evidence. Actually, I need to correct that. We did. It's on page 12 of our brief in footnote 7. We recognize just what Mr. Grafe brought to your attention, no previous discipline, and the fact that restitution was made, albeit that it was made as a result of an order of the court, and that is one of the stipulations. As Mr. Grafe mentioned, Mr. McAuliffe continues to challenge his conviction.
Ms. Brown, what is the status of the Section 2255 proceeding in federal court?
What is the status of it? My understanding is as recently as, and maybe Mr. Grafe can help me, as recently as last week or the week before, Mr. McAuliffe filed a response to the government's response and a motion for summary judgment on some of the issues.
That's correct.
So it's ready for decision by the trial judge? Is that correct?
I believe I read that Mr. McAuliffe had also waived the evidentiary hearing. Did he do that? Yes, he has waived the evidentiary hearing that he had asked for in his original motion. And as we asked in our brief, if this court is considering looking at or evaluating the 2255 motion, which admittedly the board's opinion on this issue is somewhat ambiguous, it is part of the record but was not considered by the panel. If this court has any desire to consider the merits of the 2255 motion, we would ask to supplement the record with the government's response.
Counsel, could we ask and direct both parties to inform us immediately of any ruling by Judge Marbley?
We could, Your Honor, but that does not, I don't believe, resolve the issues that are before this court. Mr. McAuliffe has every option, whether Mr. Grafe is his counsel, and believe me, I completely believe Mr. Grafe when he represents to this court that, as far as he's concerned, that's the only thing he's asking this court to delay. But Mr. McAuliffe has other options. He's a citizen of the United States. He is in federal custody. He has other options to prolong this, as well as if Judge Marbley rules in his favor, this matter goes on ad infinitum at this point. The Steele decision, GovBar Rule 5, and this court's prior decision mandate, we believe, that this court, and the need for finality, mandate that this court recognize the jury verdict, the Court of Appeals affirmation, and the Supreme Court's refusal to take this case on certiorari, and that you disbar Mr. McAuliffe as a result of his criminal convictions.
Ms. Brown, you have referred to GovBar Rule 5 several times. Specifically, what portion of it are you saying would mandate the result that you're requesting?
GovBar Rule 5, Section 5B.
Thank you.
Subsequent sections of Section 5 also talk about that the disciplinary proceedings shall be stayed during direct appeals. There is nothing in GovBar Rule 5 about staying disciplinary proceedings while post-conviction relief is sought by a respondent. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Brown. Mr. Grafe, you've used your time, but you may take 30 seconds.
Real quickly, in May of, I believe, in 2005, this court ordered the interim suspension. And as far as the clarification, we have no problem with that continuing until the conclusion of the decision by the District Court Judge Marbley. If the court has no further questions, that concludes my argument.
Thank you, Mr. Grafe.
Thank you very much.
Case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.